You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, May 31st, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Joe Biden believes that there are rational Republicans who may sign on to some gun legislation. Spoiler alert, there aren't. Meanwhile, Canada looks to freeze handgun sales and to mandate a buyback of assault weapons. Supreme Court now, Supreme Court are now checking clerks' phone records in pursuit of the leaker. Peter Navarro, subpoenaed by January 6th committee. Biden, meanwhile, withstands pressure to sell Ukraine rockets, which could strike inside Russia. New reports Russia now controls most of a key city en route to securing the Donbass region. South Dakota Republicans are trying to amend their constitution to stop Medicaid expansion. The DOJ and the FBI are investigating Trump fake elector plot in multiple states. DOJ is incidentally ramping up its case against Donald Trump. Austin looking to shield residents from an impending post-Roe state ban on abortion. Hundred Starbucks stores, meanwhile, across the country have now voted to unionize, including in the company's hometown of Seattle. That was the number 100. And for those of you keeping score at home, that is an 88% rate of winning unionization votes in local Starbucks. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us after the long weekend. Back in studio. Well, I mean, you didn't really go out of studio.
No.
Emma Vigeland. Emma, how are you?
I'm doing well. Look.
All right, go ahead.
Well,
It was inevitable. I heard people talking about it today, and the Rangers came back from 3-1 twice.
No. Well, 3-1 the first series, and then they were they won in game seven against the Penguins, and then this time around they were basically winning. They didn't have a home ice advantage, and they were winning each home game, and then on game seven they won in Carolina on their home ice. So they're on to the Eastern Conference Finals, which is a really big deal for me. This is like now I've been kind of protecting myself, saying, oh, it's just gravy that they're even here. Now it's going to start to get serious, and you might see some mood swings from me on the court.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Right.
Fair enough. There you go.
But you had a nice weekend?
Yeah, I did. Celtics. But let's not talk about that. No, I mean, yes, I'm excited about the Celtics, but I went to Governor's Island with my kids.
Yeah.
And that was good. I also did a little bit of planting. Planted a tree from fast-growing trees. That is not a paid
No, you just plug. Like the product.
I like the product, and I now have pristine and Mutsu apple trees growing.
Wow.
You know, and that is pretty controversial, seeing as my stance on green apples is pretty well known. But let's get into this. One of the things that we missed over the weekend, I am reminded by Atrios over at the blog Eschaton that on May 29th, 2003, Thomas Friedman made his famous visit to the, oh gosh, I can't even remember his name now.
Charlie Rose.
I used to be obsessed with the Charlie Rose show around this time and prior to it, actually. And gave an explanation as to the invasion. This is now 4 months into it, 3 months into it, when it became starting to become clear there are no weapons of mass destruction. There's still this sort of bizarre belief that somehow we are going to impose a democracy in Iraq by killing, I guess, all the non-democratic forces, presumably. And people like Thomas Friedman needed to go out and sell their part in selling the war to the American public. And probably one of the highlights of my pundit career was going on to the Dylan Radigan show, maybe in 2012, maybe 8-9 years after this moment. Thomas Friedman had tried to get this clip pulled down many, many, many times over the years because he was quite embarrassed by it. People would go up to him on the street and say stuff like this. And on the Dylan Radigan show, in the context of, I think, like, you know, Occupy, if I remember correctly, I was able to repeat his words to him in some fashion. But let's first hear this. This is important because there's a lot of people who listen to this show, if I can believe the YouTube data anyways. I don't know if it's the same on the audio podcast. But 75% of the people who watch this show on YouTube are younger than me, and significantly younger than me. And so this is important to understand. Thomas Friedman now is just a lunatic who writes about, I don't know what he wrote the other day.
He went to have lunch with Biden, and he wrote about the food that he that was served to him in this like masturbatory New York Times op-ed, but also about how Biden needs to appeal to the moderate Republican voter. It's the same garbage over and over again.
And Thomas Friedman was instrumental in selling the war to a wide swath of liberals in this country. And by liberals, you know, it's not the same word 20 some odd years ago as it is today. You had people like, you know, Glenn Greenwald has written that he was on board with George Bush's war at the time because maybe they paid very little attention to politics or something to that effect. And there was a whole host of people like that who, you know, I feel like my parents were like that. Well, if Thomas Friedman says it's okay, he's no, you know, right winger. And listen to what he had to say on March 29th, 2003.
Now that the war is over and there's some difficulty with the peace, was it worth doing?
Well, I think it was unquestionably worth doing, Charlie. And I think that looking back, I now certainly feel I understand more what the war was about. And it's interesting to talk about it here in Silicon Valley, because I think looking back at the 1990s, I can identify that there are actually three bubbles of the 1990s. There was the NASDAQ bubble. There was the corporate governance bubble. And lastly, there was what I would call the terrorism bubble. And the first two were based on creative accounting. The last was based on moral creative accounting. The terrorism bubble that basically built up over the 1990s said, flying airplanes terrorism into the World bubble. Trade Center, that's okay. Wrapping yourself with dynamite and blowing up Israelis in a pizza parlor, that's okay. Because we're weak and they're strong and the weak have a different morality. Having your preachers say that's okay, that's okay. Having your charities raise money for people who do these kinds of things, that's okay. And having your press call people who do these kind of things martyrs, that's okay. And that built up as a bubble, Charlie. And 9/11 to me was the the peak of that bubble. And what we learned on 9/11 in a gut way was that that bubble was a fundamental threat to our open society. Because there is no wall high enough, no INS agent smart enough, no metal detector efficient enough to protect an open society from people motivated by that bubble.
I want to pause right here because we're going to get to. But I just, this part of. Okay, pause it. We got to pause it. Pause. Wait, what's going on? All right, so I want you to go back a little bit. That part of what Friedman says doesn't get enough attention in this because of what he's about to say. But think about what the threats are to an open society in this country now and around the West. And I would argue, and I think you can read Spencer Ackerman's book in some way touched on this, that it was the response to 9/11 and the idea that we could do whatever we wanted to whomever a number of people, depending on whose estimates, anywhere killing from hundreds of thousands, that's the Defense Department's estimation of innocent civilians, to over a million in Iraq for something that had nothing to do with 9/11. Nothing. Nothing to do with the terrorism that he's talking about. Nothing to do with the imams and the martyrs. None of that stuff that he talked about. None of it. And we killed anywhere from a couple hundred thousands to a million people. It does, whose numbers do you want to use? Everybody agrees we created millions and millions of refugees, internal and external. We destabilized the region. On and on and on. So you think about the greatest threats that we have today. So many of them are traceable back to the way our society changed after that moment, both politically, both in terms of way the national security state, in terms of the way that we faced the rest of the world, which is not to say that we had, a great reputation necessarily before then. But, in the great scheme of things, Iraq, particularly after having done Vietnam, we killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
I don't know if there is a good reason, but for really no reason except for this idea in this guy's head that there was some type of bubble.
Yeah, the terrorism bubble.
Talk about creative moral accounting.
My God.
But listen to what he says after this.
After making basically a cultural critique of Muslim people and claiming that it's their morality of the weak is what drives them here.
Right. As if the notion of like this is a new idea that asymmetric warfare is legitimate because we've been oppressing. Yeah, but continue.
Was that bubble was a fundamental threat to our open society. Because there is no wall high enough, no INS agent smart enough, no metal detector efficient enough to protect an open society from people motivated by that bubble. And what we needed to do was go over to that part of the world, I'm afraid, and burst that bubble. We needed to go over there, basically, take out a very big stick right in the heart of that world. And burst that bubble. And there was only one way to do it. Because part of that bubble said, we've got you. This bubble is actually going to level the balance of power between us and you because we don't care about life. We're ready to sacrifice, and all you care about are your stock options and your Hummers. And what they needed to see was American boys and girls going house to house from Basra to Baghdad and basically saying, which part of this sentence don't you understand? You don't think, we care about our open society? You think this bubble fantasy where it's going to let it grow? Well, suck on this. Okay? That, Charlie, was what this war was about. We could have hit Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, he goes on to say, no, let it keep going here for a second.
It was part of that bubble. Could it hit Pakistan? We hit Iraq because we could. That's the real truth. And the message.
Yeah.
Because we could.
Because we could. Because if we had gone into Saudi Arabia, it would have cost us oil. If we'd gone into Pakistan, we would have started World War, some version of World War III.
So the Iraq was our way to say to that that part of the region, that region of the world, suck on this. You're going to taste the blood from the the bloodbath that we cause, and it's going to level the balances of power just a little bit.
The idea is we were using those hundreds of thousands or million Iraqi civilians. This is the way we're going to teach you a lesson. I mean, think about I don't know where Thomas Friedman is on, any other conflict that's going on right now. But think about that concept. That's what he's saying. He is saying we need to kill a sufficient number of these people to say, hey, don't mess with us because we'll come and kill an enormous amount of your people. Now, we could have done it somewhere else, like with people who might have had some more direct culpability, vaguely. None of these civilians did.
Yeah, but they were brown. They were Muslim.
But look.
Suck on this.
Iraq, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, what's the diff? Let's just take out some expendables and show the world that we can do it.
It escaped me the first time. I mean, I'm just looking on the suggested videos, and 5 years ago we did an anniversary video of this clip too. But that he explicitly puts it in the terms of rape, like we have a big stick and we say suck on this. Like, imagine if like a Russian propagandist said that about the Ukraine invasion. Like, we would all know how to code that.
Exactly. I mean, this is a demented human being.
Yeah.
Still
in the New York Times
controlling the real estate on perhaps the most important newspaper in the world.
I mean, he opens this piece talking about, I can tell you two things at the White House, what I ate and how I felt after, right? So it's just ridiculous in detail, the food he ate at the White House. But go to the end, if you could, Matt. All the way at the bottom, because this is the part that I think is, it's just ridiculous. These final three paragraphs, talking basically about the gridlock in Washington. Biden is not blameless in this dilemma, nor is the Democratic Party, particularly its far left wing. Under pressure to revive the economy and facing big ticket demands from the far left, Biden pursued expansive spending for too long. House Democrats also sullied one of Biden's most important bipartisan achievements, a giant infrastructure bill, by making it hostage to other excessive spending.
Pause
demands.
It for one second.
Yeah.
Pause it for one second.
Pause my voice.
I'm sorry.
It's funny.
Okay. First of all, pursued expansive spending for too long. There was one bill that took place in February, March. This guy is upset, presumably because there are labor shortages. He is he's married to a millionaire, billionaire heiress. I can't remember exactly which one. The idea that one can sully a bipartisan achievement is just one of the most bizarre. The bill passed. Granted, it passed and sunk what Biden's fundamental primary achievement was to be, that he won the election on. But Sully, what the F does this mean?
No, by being upset that Build Back Better didn't pass. I mean, it says by holding it hostage, right? Where is that? Holding it hostage to other excessive spending demands. Dude, it passed. It wasn't held hostage. In fact, they were separated, much to the chagrin of progressives, and it was not held hostage. But just because that was a demand or proposed by members of the left in the House, he's, just because they wanted to achieve that, he's saying that it sullied it.
All right, he goes on to say, defeat Trumpism, we need 10% of Republicans to abandon their party. Well, here's the point. There is no 10% of Republicans that are going to be. I mean, contemplate this idea. Like 10%, that is an enormous amount of Republicans who are going to decide post-Trump that we're no longer going to be with Trump. Like,
well, he says that it's not going to happen, but he blames the far-left Democrats because they're, quote, defining the party's future. That's the way to do it. Even though it was the Democratic leadership and the centrists who killed Build Back Better. They were the ones that did it, not the left, but it doesn't really matter. You can still put it in print in the New York Times anyway.
But understand what this part of this project is. By all accounts, and it's not necessarily marked in stone, but there's a lot of people who believe that the Democrats are going to get really annihilated, particularly in the House, come the fall. And particularly with what's happened with the redistricting in New York, there is a secular favoring, a structural favoring of Republicans to win, on top of which there is a sort of cyclical nature of Republicans to win. The party that is in office in the presidency usually loses in the off-year elections. This is the beginning or part of a project to blame the left for the failures of the Democrats in the fall. It's all part of that project. But fortunately, the number of people who listen to Thomas Friedman is diminished. And I promise you, we will mark this anniversary. Certainly, we'll do it for the 20th anniversary. And maybe we'll take it to every 5 years until he passes on. I will say this. If you remind me, and I have retired before he passes away, because, you know, with that kind of money, they can put you on all sorts of machines for a long time. You live forever. Like, you just have like some...
He'll get that
put
kid.
That brain in the back.
You get that Kissinger diet, right?
Kissinger diet, or maybe you get the...
The blood of children.
The blood of children. They start to transfuse, whatever it is. I'll come out of retirement to mark that clip. And that's why we keep making these videos, too. There's only so many of these things they can take down. So, happy anniversary to the suck on this. Oh,
suck
I should
on
say
this video, in fact.
I said, so I was on the Dylan Radigan show.
Yeah.
I turned to Thomas Friedman and we were talking about,
I can't believe you sat next to him without,
I was across the thing.
Yeah.
And I was just waiting for this opportunity. And we were talking about Occupy. We didn't get to anything that could deal with it head on. And I said, but aren't the wealthy in this country just saying to the rest of the people in this country, suck on this? And he looked at me and he said something. And then during the entire break, he's just staring at me and I'm just going like this to him. And just the idea that he had to go home that night and wonder,
wondering though?
Yes. Oh, my understanding is very sensitive about that.
No, I mean, but of course he wasn't wondering. Like, it must have been clear that you were messing with him.
At the moment, at the moment it wasn't.
Well, then he's not very bright either.
He's also
you
want to
be
bright,
denial, yeah. I guess, too.
Yes, yeah. And that was enough to make every stupid hit that I had done on cable television worth it at that point. I got into a fight with Pataki too, but that was that's another story. Couple of sponsors on the program today. Maybe you have a small business. Maybe you just send a lot of letters. Maybe you're like,
you have a pen pal.
Or maybe you're more like my daughter, who thinks she has a small business, selling the clothes that I buy her.
Right. I mean, frankly, it's very lucrative for her.
It is very lucrative for her. But one of the things you don't want to do is spend time on stuff that is not, you know, helping your business. Leaving your office, taking your time, going down to the post office, going to whatever drop-off location, whatever it takes for to ship things, is a waste of time. Especially when you could be using Stamps.com instead. Stamps.com makes mailing and shipping quick, easy, and cost-effective. For more than 20 years, Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses. Stamps.com. You get discounts you can't find anywhere else. 30% off U.S. Postal Service rates and 86% off UPS rates. Stamps.com works seamlessly with Shopify, Amazon, Etsy, eBay, more of those online stores. All you need is a regular computer and printer. You don't need any special supplies. You don't need any special equipment. You're up and running in minutes. You're printing official postage for any letter, any package, anywhere you want, at literally any time of day. 3 in the afternoon, of course. 3 in the morning, I mean, if you can't sleep, why not? 7 in the morning, you're an early riser. 12:05,
yeah, we get it. We get it.
Anytime. Yeah. I think that's just amazing. Like, you don't understand. You guys are too young. You don't get, like, this is like magic. Look, stop wasting time. Start saving money when you use stamps.com to mail and ship. You sign up with promo code MajorityReport for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale.
Whoa.
Yep. No long-term commitments, no long-term contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, enter the code MajorityReport. One word, MajorityReport. Also, this is very helpful for me. I have a bunch of different email addresses. And part of the reason why I did that, some of it is idiosyncratic, but some of it is also, like, I want some that are super, super private and safe. Not up to anything nefarious, but if I ever want to be. But even still, like, I don't want my emails hacked. I don't want somebody to break in, use my email, maybe for my bank account or something like that. And the bottom line is free email services like Gmail and Yahoo, if you're still using those, aren't really free. You pay with your privacy. Internet giants exploit your data by selling it to the highest bidder. That's why when you write your aunt about, like, oh, I don't know, I was always interested in, I want to get a new fish tank or something, and all of a sudden Gmail starts serving you fish tank ads. So they sell your data to the highest bidder. With StartMail, you can feel safe again. StartMail keeps your email private. Every email can be encrypted, even if the recipient doesn't use encryption. When you delete an email in StartMail, you actually delete it. It's gone forever. Switching to StartMail is easy. It is seamless. You can transfer all your current email data instead of starting from scratch. StartMail uses their own servers. They are backed by the most stringent privacy laws in the world. With StartMail, you get unlimited anonymous aliases. So when you're giving your email to a company but want to protect your identity, StartMail can generate a shareable alias email that can be deleted anytime. This is also very helpful for stuff like, I need to give them my email address to get my whatever 10% coupon,
yes,
or I want to try out this service, but I don't want to get emails from them until the day I die. StartMail is very, very helpful with that. It's also really just ultimately about your privacy, and it's about denying these companies the data they want to commodify you and to sell you more commodities. Then you've got stuff like, surveillance, et cetera, et cetera. You can start securing your email privacy with StartMail today. Sign up today and you'll get 50% off your first year. Go to startmail.com/majority. That's StartMail with a T, S-T-A-R-T, mail.com/majority for 50% off your first year. StartMail.com/majority. Check it out. Also, you can always find the links to our ads in the today's post. We even leave that up for members' posts so that they can get the discounts on that. We include them in the AM Quickie sometimes too. We're working on some type of device on our app too, so that you can just access those. But this is a reminder. It is your support that makes this show possible. If you have the finances to become a member, and you listen to the show and enjoy it on a regular basis, become a member today. You get not only you get the free show, free of commercials, you get access to the fun half of the program. A reminder to members, and Matt, I want to make sure that you do this today. The link for the show will be at the top of the post.
At the very top.
Not after the descriptions, but at the very top of the post for members.
Nice.
And so you'll be able to click on it and get right to the fun half of the program. In the post, you just sign up at log in at majority.fm. Also, again, reminder, if you are one of those people who do not have the finances to become a member and you want access to the fun half, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Put the words fun half in the subject line and we will hook you up. It'll take a little while, but I will get there and we will hook you up. And yes, we've gotten multiple emails about creating some type of like donation bank for people, you know, to donate memberships for people who are in a situation right now where they can't afford it. We're working on building something like that. It's a great idea, and people have been requesting it. A lot of more people than one would think. So I appreciate that. All right, let's get into this. You know, there's a couple of pieces. Joe Biden's out there today. I don't know if he just said this today over the weekend. He told CNN, do we have the audio for this? Do we have the video?
No.
He told CNN on Thursday that he met with, Mitch McConnell said this. He met with John Cornyn and encouraged him to speak with Democrats to find a compromise on legislation. And somehow Joe Biden is buying this. And he is supposedly waiting for, what did he call them? Rational Republicans?
We have the tweet. Just one second.
This first off, again, the Democrats can't seem to understand this concept, the Democratic leadership.
Yeah.
There's a story in Business Insider. And look, I get it. Republicans are the problem. Don't email me. Because we're talking about the Democratic leadership not getting that.
And the fact that
Democrats... Send your emails to them.
Yes, Democrats have... majorities in a very slim one, to be fair, but in the Senate and the House as well, and the presidency. So blaming Republicans right now.
Well, no, I mean, look, Joe Manchin's not going to do it. I get it. But the best that Democrats can do at this point is to be engaged in politics about it. Business Insider reported that like a month ago, Joe Biden started using the term ultra MAGA. And he started using the term ultra MAGA because apparently Anita Dunn and the Center for American Progress did 6 months worth of like focus testing. And the idea was ultra MAGA they came up with because it was an idea of like saying to Republicans like, hey, they're super extreme.
It's and MAGA, you're not like but that. Ultra.
And just like Thomas Friedman has suggested, we're going to peel 10% of you off. And then you know what happened? The Republicans all started calling themselves ultra MAGA. Elise Stefanik said, I'm ultra MAGA and I'm proud of it. Donald Trump started selling T-shirts saying, I'm ultra MAGA.
It sounds cool. It sounds
I
like
mean,
a superhero.
It is the ability of the Democrats to get that there's no magic word that you're going to do. You need to communicate that Republicans are bad. Okay, and that's, yes, I know that's a juvenile way of saying it, are unhelpful, are radical, are extreme. And there are no good ones because they can't be. Mitch McConnell, I don't know what's in his empty, dark, rotted heart, but it doesn't matter. The point is, he wants to stay in power. The Republican Party is now completely beholden, and that's the best thing you can say. They are completely beholden to insaniacs.
And any Republican that's speaking about, say, I don't know, some semblance of gun control, toying with it, is not going to be elected in elected office for either they're retiring or they have plans on retiring.
Yes, this is the point. The Democratic leadership has to make it clear that there are no rational Republicans. To call Mitch McConnell a rational Republican after Joe Biden 2 years ago said, give me 6 months after Donald Trump is gone, they're going to have an epiphany. And then he sort of backed off that. And then he sort of, you know, invited Republicans in to negotiate Build Back Better and destroyed his primary agenda. And now the idea that they're still going around saying we need strong Republicans. There are rational Republicans. There are not.
And the only one that is, right?
Is not going to be a Republican anymore.
Yeah, Kinzinger. We'll play this.
Here we go. Here's a clip from Adam Kinzinger. This is what a rational Republican looks like. And the definition of a rational Republican lawmaker is one who is also retiring. You can remember that because that starts with an R2.
Well, it's good that you say this because I'm sure the Democratic leadership is going to say, thank you so much, Adam Kinzinger, for this love.
This is proof that there are rational Republicans if they hope to have no future in Republican politics.
Yeah.
Play this clip.
Congressman, you do still oppose a ban on the kind of assault weapons that were used in the shooting. Can you explain why private citizens need weapons of war?
Look, I have opposed a ban, fairly recently. I think I'm open to a ban now. It's going to depend what it looks like because there's a lot of nuances on what constitutes, you know, certain things. But I'm getting to the point where I have to wonder, maybe somebody to own one. Maybe you need an extra license. Maybe you need extra training. And so the question is it a ban versus an additional certification? But yeah, I got to tell you, I mean, the 99.9% of people that own ARs, we all know, are not going to walk into a school and do this. But the problem is for those that support the Second Amendment, like me, we have to be coming to the table with ways to mitigate 18-year-olds buying these guns and walking into schools. My side's not doing that. My side's not coming forward with reasonable ways to defend an amendment that we think is very important. And so I'm looking at this going, fine, if people are going to put forward solutions about certifying maybe who can buy an assault weapon, I'm certainly open to that.
All right. Now, here's the funny part about this. Aside from the fact that, yes, he's making this great compromise only because he's retiring.
And he's not even saying that he will support it. He's saying he's open to it.
He's open. But let's give him the benefit.
Yeah, because by the way, they're going to. No, but just a quick point. They're going to negotiate this and it's going to be long and protracted and people are going to forget about it.
Nothing's going to happen.
And nothing's going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen.
That's why they should have acted and not gone on vacation. They should have acted the day after with some urgency.
But to be clear, it also puts the lie because I, to be fair, I have not looked this up, although I can imagine. That when Kinzinger in the past was against any certification or whatever, I mean, he's claiming he's moved, right, on this position. When he was against in the past any certification or double licensing or whatever it is, he undoubtedly cited the Second Amendment and said, we cannot infringe upon this completely uninfringible right established in the Constitution. And now, of course, we realize that he doesn't really believe that. He doesn't really believe that, and he has the latitude to talk like at least a somewhat rational human being because he's going to retire. There's a piece that was in the New York Times written by Kate Shaw, and who served as a clerk for Justice John Paul Stevens. And another clerk who served as a clerk for Scalia, that is John Bash, who is now an attorney in private practice, served at the DOJ, was U.S. attorney under Donald Trump, law clerk from Scalia from 2007 to 2008. Kate Shaw, professor at Cardozo Law School, host of the Supreme Court podcast Strict Scrutiny. I think she's married to Hayes. And they clerked for the two justices who wrote both the majority opinion and the minority dissent in the Heller case, which was from 2008. It was the case that established an individual's right to have a handgun in their home, not subject to any government regulation. Because for the other 200 some odd years of this country, the Second Amendment was not interpreted as giving individuals a right to carry arms. And when you tweet at me, when I tweet this out and you say, my dad, you're wrong. My dad had a permit to carry a gun 40 years ago. Yes, he had a permit, which meant that he had a license, which meant that the state provided him a privilege to carry that gun. In the same way, you don't have a right to drive a car. You need to carry a license that says the state says it's okay for you. That is an indication that at that time, the Constitution, as interpreted by the Supreme Court for over 200 years, did not give you an unfettered right to carry a weapon as an individual. So they're writing in the New York Times that despite the fact that both these people totally disagree on the concept of gun control, et cetera, they agree on what Scalia's opinion in Heller said and did not say. And according to them, Heller merely established the constitutional baseline that the government may not disarm citizens in their homes. The opinion expressly recognized, quote, presumptively lawful regulations, such as laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms. Keep this in mind. When everybody talks about the Second Amendment, Scalia, the greatest lunatic, well, arguably one of the greatest lunatics, at least up to that time, who had served on the Supreme Court, wrote, laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms was presumptively lawful, as well as bans on carrying weapons in sensitive places, like schools. It noted with approval the, quote, the historical tradition of prohibiting the carrying of dangerous and unusual weapons. Heller also recognized the immense public interest in prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill. This is a very, very different Second Amendment than these people try and pretend it is. Nothing in Heller cast doubt on the permissibility of background check laws or requires the so-called Charleston loophole, which allows individuals to purchase firearms even without completed background checks. Nor does Heller prohibit giving law enforcement officers more effective tools and greater resources to disarm people who have proved themselves to be violent or mentally ill, as long as due process is observed. Heller also gives the government at least some leeway to restrict kinds of firearms that can be purchased. I mean, if you can't own a grenade launcher, can't society decide that a AR-15 has no more value to society than a grenade launcher? Or rather, society has a vested interest in not allowing individuals to carry grenade launchers? What possible reason would society have for justifying the carrying of an AR-15? What possible reason that is so compelling that it outweighs inhibiting 18-year-olds or anybody of any age from getting one of these weapons that are so intimidating, cops are going to wait in the hallway until you've fired out and killed all the kids in the room? What could possibly, what sane, rational person could come up with a reason why people need to carry AR-15s? Well, here is Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy trying to give a reason why society should make the determination that despite the fact that there's a compelling interest to not allow people to carry this type of assault weapon around, he's got an answer for that.
Do you think that there is any room to ban assault weapons in this country? Why does someone need an AR-15?
Well, if you talk to the people that own it, killing feral pigs in the, you know, whatever, the middle of Louisiana, they wonder, why would you take it away from me? I'm law-abiding. I've never done anything. I use it to kill feral pigs. The action of a criminal deprives me of my right.
So, you know, the right to kill feral pigs is not being outlawed. You can still do that with your shotgun. You can still do it with another kind of weapon if you want to kill your feral pigs.
Or but we could just license you. Like, the yes. amount of people that have a feral pig issue, like, we can get a license for that. The Game and Fish Department is set up for that. And in fact, like, there's a sorry to cut you off.
No, okay.
There was this letter to the editor to the Mankato Free Press. And this person makes a really good point that's very obvious. It shows, like, this stuff isn't unconstitutional and actually is a part of gun regulations. Federal law today limits hunters of migratory waterfowl to use of a shotgun with a magazine that holds 3 rounds or less. Sportsmen, conservatives, and the NRA support this regulation to protect waterfowl, because otherwise you could keep pumping your shotgun and just definitely, like, have 10 shots to shoot a duck and all the ducks going to be gone. And there's nobody complaining about that. That is limiting people's freedom to shoot ducks and reload as fast as they want, but nobody squawks about it because it's not politicized.
Yeah, but, like, the feral pig... Oh, sorry, what'd you say?
Yet.
Go. Yes. No, but the feral pig thing is, it makes it silly, but it also lays bare how ridiculous it is. And I just notice how these conservatives are naturalizing the right to an AR-15 or an assault rifle, which, reminder, the assault weapons ban sunsetted in 2004. Like, this isn't something that's existed for the past 50 years or more in terms of this kind of weaponry. So, yes, you can absolutely limit it. And the right to kill feral pigs at the rate and efficiency that you want to kill feral pigs is not something that the founders had in mind.
And listen, the bottom line is, it just comes down to a test. Is there a compelling interest in society to limit the guns that are available to ones that are not assault weapons like this? What are the two competing interests? So far, on one hand, we have Central Louisiana killing feral pigs. Again, that's presuming that you cannot specifically license for the killing of feral pigs use of an AR-15 versus society not wanting people who have made the decision for whatever reason to go in and slaughter children or adults, for that matter. Society has an interest in not providing them the most convenient and easy and expedient way of doing so. That is why you cannot go into Dick's Sporting Goods and buy a rocket launcher. It's a weapon. It's
probably,
arms.
Probably
right?
Good for feral pigs.
That might be arms. More efficient for killing
Very
feral pigs.
Very good for feral pigs. But what are you going to do? You got like 12 feral pigs come at you. Boom, one rocket launcher.
We need to just nuke the whole feral pig compound. That would be more efficient.
But we don't do it because society has an interest in not having people go around with rocket launchers. And, like, what is it going to take to prove that society has an interest in not having people go around with AR-15s? I mean, that's the bottom line. And the Heller decision, as decrepit and twisted as it is, in my opinion,
it leaves still room for regulation. Room for that. Yes, 100%.
Here is North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson speaking at a church in North Carolina. Here is. Yeah, this is back in May. All right, let's listen to this. Here's okay, listen to this.
Well, I tell anybody, I got them AR-15s at home, and I like to go target shooting and all that, but that's not what they're there for. And I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm probably not supposed to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. I got them AR-15s in case the government gets too big for its britches. Because I'm going to fill the backside of them britches with some lead. I'm going to just say it to you. I'm going to say it to you plain. Your boy ain't going down without swinging. Well, I tell it.
Well, I mean.
Fantasies.
These are, lunatic fantasies. Lunatic fantasies.
Paranoia is such a, like, through line of Republican psychology.
It's not even, like, it's also just, it's delusion, too. Delusion. I got news for you. Like, I don't know what you think, if the government's coming for you, you may be able to shoot some of the people who are unarmed around you, but ultimately you're going to end up like that dude in Texas.
Yeah. Because even though the cops were a little bit too afraid to engage with him,
they'll mass up enough.
He died eventually.
Yes. He was shot, killed.
And I guess the government doesn't have any AR-15s, right?
For the lieutenant governor.
Yeah. You are the government.
In addition to you being the government, if this really is about fighting back against the government coming, I would say maybe it's time you do a little more training. Because unless you're going to be in a 12-inch lead bunker,
a foxhole,
and you're going to be on the tallest mountain in the world, and you have some ability to shoot down the helicopters, you may involve a little bit of movement on your part. And I just got some bad news for you. If you're gearing up for the final assault from the government, I got some really bad news about what I think your abilities are going to be if push comes to shove.
It's not really about that, though.
I had a buddy upstate who came up to me at one point. I've told this story. He's like, I got a hold of a relative's gun. They gave it to me. It's got the serial number scratched off. And this guy had, I don't think it was exactly an AR-15, but it was an assault weapon with a laser scope. I asked him what that's for. He said zombies. He had a shotgun, his and her butt, that would shift. 22, which was like, pfft. Yeah. But he had the handgun, and he said, it doesn't have a serial number on it. Untraceable. And I'm like,
okay, so zombies need to trace the
stuff. I was like, what are you doing with that? And he goes, I buried it out at the tree line. And the tree line is quite a ways off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? Why? And he goes, just in case they come for me. I'm like, who's coming for you? The government. If the government comes for me. And I'm like, dude, what? First of all,
he'll be able to zig and zag, no, right? And then the drone strike will miss him on, like, his way to the tree line.
First off, he was in no shape to make it to the tree line. Unless he somehow got into his truck and drove to the tree line. But then you get into the tree line, you can't take your truck anywhere. You're going to get out. And what are you going to do with that handgun? Like, if they're coming for you, how do you think they're going to come for you?
That's why he needs an AR-15.
Well, first they send the postman. And the postman says, come with me down to the... I mean, this is just
insane. But why I say it's not really about that is because, like, we're talking about the paranoia being a through line. It's also, like, delusions of grandeur about one's own place in the world. It's all narcissism. I'm going to be able to take down the government myself. They don't feel like they exist in society. So the conservatives, you know, they silo themselves and they think that they're going to be able to take down the government themselves. It's a male fantasy, too.
Yes. The problem is the movies that had when we were in the 80s. It's like Red Dawn and Die Hard.
Top Gun Maverick's coming out this week. That was Top Gun's a Reaganite fantasy as well.
Watch any horror, cop, or crime movie, and, like, what is the one that sort of thing you need is a gun. Like, you got to make sure you have a gun to protect yourself. It's like we're inundated with that message.
It's insane.
I've not seen Red Dawn yet, but should I see
it? You got
to
see the original.
I know, but I want to see it maybe just for anthropological reasons, not for enjoyment. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's incredibly enjoyable. You definitely have to see it. It's fantastic.
I think I've seen the scene where they start parachuting in, right? At the opening scene?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Cubans.
Yeah.
Of course.
All right.
Yeah. With Russia. Or, I guess, the Soviet Union at that time.
Be an ambitious invasion.
All right. Let's play this clip, one last clip. We've had these guys on. This is
They're
it's
awesome.
The Good Liars.
Yeah.
and what's his name?
Jason Selvig.
Jason Selvig. And they have done been doing this now for like 6 to 8 years, I think. Stuff like this. He made it to the NRA annual conference in Houston, Texas. And again, you know, the NRA is not what it was. It is in many respects a shell of what it was, but it was so successful that in many respects, you don't need it anymore.
Yeah, its legacy is within every Republican voter. They are the NRA. It's
angels
now.
In the outfield sort of thing.
Yes. They built it and they have all come. But here is Jason Selvig at the NRA meeting. It is amazing they allowed him to go on this long.
And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
The chair recognizes the gentleman at microphone 1A.
Thank you. My name is Jason Selvig, and I'm from West Palm Beach, Florida. And I would like to say that I am sick and tired of the left-wing media and, frankly, people in this room today spreading misinformation about Wayne LaPierre. Whenever there's a mass shooting, they all say that Wayne LaPierre isn't doing enough to stop these mass shootings, and even implying that Wayne LaPierre has played a part in making it easier for these shooters to get guns, to get weapons. You heard it after Las Vegas. You heard it after Pulse nightclub in Orlando. You heard it after Columbine. You heard it after Parkland. You heard it after Virginia Tech. You heard it after Sandy Hook. You heard it after El Paso. You heard it after Buffalo. You kept hearing that Wayne LaPierre isn't doing enough. And frankly, that's not true. The NRA, under Wayne LaPierre's leadership, has provided thoughts and prayers to the victims and their families. And maybe these mass shootings would stop happening if we all thought a little bit more and we prayed a little bit more. So I'm asking everyone in this room to think, to pray. Give your thoughts and your prayers and your thoughts and your prayers and your prayers and your thoughts. And if we give enough of these thoughts and these prayers, these mass shootings will stop. So I want to thank you, Wayne LaPierre, for all your thoughts and all your prayers. Thank you.
Yep. They were clapping after that. It was amazing. He was just toeing that line just enough. I love the like look of confusion on LaPierre's face.
I wonder how many shootings he could have listed off before they cut his mic.
Right.
Yeah, it would have been interesting for him to just go on and on for like 5-10 minutes, but they did not cut off his mic. Yes, that is power.
They were all just a little confused. They were like, we think that he's coming after us, but we can't exactly be sure.
Right. It's too close to what we actually say.
Yeah.
Well, that's the funny part of that kind of prank is that you walk up to the line, but you don't give them a reason to fully step in.
Exactly. Exactly. Well done.
All right, folks. Hope springs eternal in terms of like some effective change. I don't want to be completely jaded about this. But the least, and maybe the best, but the least we can expect from Democrats who do not have the ability to legislate, and there are some things that Biden can do around the edges, maybe from executive order, but nothing. I think, like, you know, material at this point, unilaterally. But what they can do is make the American public understand that when you vote for a Republican because you want to cut your taxes, or when you vote for a Republican because you want to outlaw abortion, you are also voting for a Republican who is going to stand in the way of saying that everybody's not going to have access to AR-15s. and this goes for everything. Every time Nancy Pelosi or Joe Biden or Chuck Schumer or any of them talk about rational Republicans or good Republicans or Republicans who are going to have an epiphany or Republicans who are anti-Trumpers or whatever qualifier they put in front of Republicans to imply that there's not something fundamentally wrong with the Republican Party, that a Republican lawmaker is beholden to the exact same forces that Ted Cruz is. And so they will vote in unison, and they do, unless it's a freebie. This is going to continue. And they are just screwing up the politics. They are making it impossible to run in, let's say, a midterm election where there's not one single presidential candidate. It's, I don't know what else. But we're going to take a quick break. Don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. It's good coffee. I don't know. I mean, it's so depressing.
I know. It is good coffee, though.
It is good coffee.
As our society collapses around us, you can at least have simple things in life, like good coffee.
Help a co-op.
Be alert.
Yeah.
Co-op that helps the Zapatistas. All right. We're going to take a quick break and head to the fun half. Matt. Oh, we should say, Nomi is not with us today. She's going to be on tomorrow.
Left Reckoning, Chip Gibbons joined me for patreon.com/Left Reckoning for patrons to talk about the disinfo board and the domestic terrorism legislation. So we got into the civil liberties stuff. What is actually concerning about the stuff and where the hyperventilation from calling it Patriot Act 2.0 is maybe a little bit exaggerated. But we get into it with Chip of defending rights and dissent. So patreon.com/Left Reckoning.
The number is 646-257-3920. You can IM the show via the app. You can pick up the app for free at majorityapp.com. Great way to make the most out of your membership. We are redoing the app, and it is going to be so sweet.
Ooh.
Yes, very sweet, and still free. Also, AM Quickie at amquickie.com. Sign up. Get the day's headline news from a left perspective. Corey and Jack writing those things. Jack back from his travels in Ukraine. Corey still on multiple beats. Great guys writing up a great newsletter. Check it out. Get in while you can. All right. See you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Fun
Hat.
Matt.
Boo. Fun Hat. What is up, everyone? Fun Hat.
Nomi Keene.
You did it.
Fun Hat.
Let's go, Brandon.
Fun Hat.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this, 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is it?
Yes.
Is it me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What? what's on your mind.
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start
life. Libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop. You call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. You gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.